Hey everyone, it's Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy, and welcome to another Lunch with Norm, The Rise of the Microbrands. Lunch with Norm. All right, we are broadcasting to you live on Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn. If you're watching a replay, just skip ahead. And for those watching on my personal profile page, head over to the official Facebook page, Norm Farrar, aka The Beard Guy, for highlights, video, and more content. So before I bring in Kelsey, I just wanted to talk a little bit about a special episode. So first of all, I want to thank Francois for coming over today. He was out promoting the podcast, and I told him, hey, we got to change because of a special episode I wanted to do. So Friday, we're doing an episode on mental health, and it's Global Suicide Prevention Day. So let's get together. Let's talk about this. I've got to give a shout out to everybody who's got involved with this. I've asked so many friends and other podcasters to help out. And, you know, they came up to bat and they started promoting the podcast like crazy. So thank you. And on another note with this is crazy, guys. So I'd probably say I reached out to 25, 30 people who got back to me and said, I know somebody since March that committed suicide. I had one lady come back and say there was five people in her life that she knew that committed suicide. So what we're trying to do here is just bring knowledge and education. If you're one person out there that's feeling down, or if you know somebody, if this podcast can help, then perfect. I did my job. So Brian Hansel is going to be on, and he is an expert in this, and he's going to talk about some of his experiences and what you can do. So please tune into that. So anyways, Kelsey, come on in and tell everybody what they're supposed to do.
Okay. Yeah, follow us on social media. And if you haven't yet and you're holding out and you don't know about, should we subscribe? Subscribe to our podcast, please. Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts. Hit that subscribe button. Leave a review. 5 stars, hopefully. Smash those like buttons. It all does us very, very well in the end. Kind of gets our podcast out there. So, yeah. Oh, and we should have this on, I guess. There we go. But yeah, if you are interested in full episodes, you can find us on YouTube. Everything here is posted. All the full episodes are there. Short clips. We have a video going out every day. Facebook. Join our Facebook group. We broadcast to the personal profile for Norm. And we have the official Norman Farrar, a.k.a. The Beard Guy. So please give that one a like, too.
All right. Okay, so I think that probably does it for our updates and housekeeping today, Kels. Is that right?
One more thing. So we are entered into the seller poll.
Yeah.
So we are up for best podcast. So you can go to sellerpoll.com right here, below here. And you can go enter and vote for us for best podcast. It would be appreciated. Okay. And yeah, I think that's it.
All right, so that is it for today's updates. And now we've got a special guest. And again, I thank him for rearranging his schedule to be on today. We don't usually broadcast on Thursdays, but today we're going to be, and next week we're actually doing it on Thursday too. So today I'd like to introduce to you the Director of Business Development over at Novaland, Francois Jaffré. And he studied industrial engineering at West Virginia University while working at Coca-Cola before joining Novaland back in 2016. So today we're going to be doing something different. We're going to be talking about the Chinese culture and how you can use that to take advantage of your negotiating or working with them overseas, as well as we're going to be talking a bit about preparing for Chinese New Year and this craziness that's going on right now. I'd also like to touch on inventory strategy with Francois as well. So if you have any comments or questions, just throw them over to the comment box and we'll get to them right away. If we don't get to them, we will answer them for sure after the podcast. So sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, and enjoy the show. All right, sir, where are you? There you are. Hi, Francois, how are you?
Hello, Norm. I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, great. Thank you. Hey, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
I'm young.
I'm old.
26. And started at Novieland back in 2016. And before that, I was studying industrial engineering, which finally finished. And that has everything to do with just business and manufacturing and essentially the business side of engineering, which I fell in love with, which is essentially everything that every entrepreneur that I talk to goes through, but they didn't have to pay, you know, $30,000 a year to figure out. And so aside from that, there's not much to say. I'm fully invested into Novieland and talking, you know, to thousands of sellers so far. And I'm talking about everywhere from those that are just starting out through the 7 and 8 figure sellers. And everyone has a story to tell. Everyone comes from different backgrounds. So I love hearing these and sort of learning ways that we can work together and just learning ways that we can help solve problems, which right. At the end of the day, every seller is going to go through, right? I mean, I'm sure you have your stories.
Oh, I've got stories. All right. So why don't we just jump right into it? When you approached me with this topic, I thought it would be pretty cool to present. So let's start talking about the differences in culture. And we're talking specifically China. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, even if you go so close as Vietnam, completely different mindsets, completely different work, labor forces, cultures. So specifically China today.
Okay. And if you go to Vietnam, though, you for the most part, the people that are investing over in Vietnam, the manufacturing facilities are basically under Chinese management, aren't they?
Yes, a lot of them are. And so when COVID hit, actually, we had a lot of major manufacturers move down there. When COVID hit, they couldn't send their people down there, whether it was engineers, whether it was those that are setting up the machinery. And that obviously took a big impact on setting up manufacturers down there. Plus anti-dumping duties and tariffs and the trade war that all affected and sort of streamlined this shift from China to Vietnam. But you still have to deal with the Vietnamese labor force. You have to deal with the supply chain there, logistics. It's all completely different.
Okay, so let's talk Chinese culture.
Yeah. I mean, the number one thing with Chinese culture, I think I want everyone to sort of understand is that first impressions always matter. And that's whether you are approaching a brand new Chinese factory or you meet just someone from China and you want to start a new, you know, friendship or relationship with them. But in particular to manufacturing, when I say first impressions, I mean, you want to look like an expert and you want to look like you are serious about doing business. And the biggest way is just really to be prepared. Right. So having your request for quotes fully thought out, not just approaching them, expecting them to do all the work for you. The biggest thing I actually want to emphasize, scratch all that, is don't start off the bat thinking that they work for you. And I say that because the most important thing that the most vital aspect to working with them is seeing it as a partnership and not just a transaction. And they'll see it the same way if you do that. Now, if you just see it as a transaction, they're going to treat it like a transaction. You're going to have poor quality. You're going to have just them treating you like, you know, you're shopping at Target or shopping at Walmart and you're trying to shop, you know, buy something. And some of that doesn't care too much. So I guess that's one thing I really want to drill down is, you know, communicating, being upfront is being serious about what you're doing. You just had Jamie on yesterday and I listened to all of it. And you guys had some amazing points about a lot of sellers not necessarily want to be fully invested into this and maybe approaching it just as a side gig and not, you know, putting in the hours of work that it actually takes. Because it's not just money. It's, you know, research, it's product development, it's branding. And you can't do that without really having a good first impression with your suppliers.
Yeah. One of the things that probably a lot of new sellers don't realize is that, especially if they haven't taken a course on Amazon or on product sourcing, they might have seen a YouTube video or they're just trying to do it themselves. it's a different ball game. So working here in North America and working overseas, getting to know the culture is one thing. And then it's a little bit about perception. So if you come across and you say to them, oh, I want 250 Norm the Gnome, figures, they're not going to take you seriously. But if you add that you're a successful Amazon seller, that you're testing the market, you're doing product development, and that you'd like to consider them as one of the suppliers that are going to be, you're bringing out a brand new Norm the Gnome line, and you can give them some numbers that they can expect in the future. And right off the bat, you're starting to negotiate as partners rather than customer and supplier relations. Correct?
100%. 100% agree. And to that point, it's, like you said, really projecting those numbers, but being honest about those projections.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a brand new Amazon seller and you took a course, I know the course sold you as, hey, you know, start out with 1,000, make a million in 10 weeks. But be honest with them. I mean, let them know your budget, and they'll let you know realistically if they could do it or not. At the end of the day, you don't want to waste your time with them. And likewise, they don't want to waste your time either.
You know, I've got a story about Chinese culture, and this is Taiwan. So 20 years ago, my dad, my brother, and I decided that we were going to go overseas and start working in Taiwan. And we eventually bought two factories over there and it was a great experience. But during the time we were over there trying to find manufacturers to work with, this is hilarious. So at that time, it was a lot different than what we do now. We went over, we would sit down, we had somebody that we hired to introduce us to everybody, and they would introduce us. We would sit down for a day, maybe go back to the hotel. Maybe it would be a week later, we would come back and then talk to them again. We might go out to dinner. There was absolutely no negotiations that went on during that time. None. They wanted to get to know you. They wanted to know your family. And in fact, one time, this large EVA manufacturer who became one of our primary suppliers, he would not do any business. He would not negotiate with us. He was dead silent when we went into the room. He had somebody else talking to us. He wouldn't talk to us. So what the heck is going on? Well, it turns out my brother's name is Steve. And we go in and we're negotiating, or we're trying to negotiate, and it's impossible. We weren't going to get anywhere. Well, it turns out back then, 20 years ago, that in the community, we were in Taichung, in this community, there was a Steve who did not pay his bill from the U.S. And of course, that Steve must be my brother. So there's no negotiating going on because this has got to be the Steve from America. So we had to explain to them, you know, that this is absolutely not the Steve. But it was, you know, and we ended up becoming very good friends. And, you know, we broke bread many times. But, you know, it was just something different that, you know, we had no idea. And even today, like, yeah, there's a lot more quick turnaround. You go onto Alibaba and it's very cold. But I love going out and dealing with my suppliers directly, or getting them onto a Zoom call or talking to them, because you will get the better. I think you'll get a better price. You'll get better turnaround. If I need something special, you know, they might give you that little extra attention. Any other things that you can add to that?
I think you hit the nail on the head. Realistically, it's, and to that point, you were talking about 20 years ago doing that. That same principle holds today, where you do want to actually visit them in person. You want to take them out. You got to be ready to drink. That's the biggest thing. And not talking shop right off the bat. And the issue that I see nowadays with, you know, us serving so many different factories is that the dynamic has changed, right? Where you went over 20 years ago and you talked to them about starting this business, talked to them about the entire project. Now they're getting requests purely through, let's say, trade agents or Alibaba. And when they're doing that, you're not building that relationship. You don't really have an opportunity to. And not only that, there weren't, you know, 1,000 norms going to that same factory and trying to get quotes from them and negotiate prices. Now that is the case. Now they're seeing, you know, hey, I'm an Amazon seller. These are my projections. Not all of them are being told the truth. They're talking about these customizations that have to be made, and this is the price point they have to get to, which there's nothing wrong with. But when you start off the relationship just asking and taking and taking and not giving anything, I mean, you're not going to get anywhere. So I always recommend, I know our job is really to cut this out, but I always recommend anyone that could visit a factory and build that relationship and get to know who it is on that other side of the screen, 100% hands down, do it. If it's Zoom, right. If it's WeChat, if it's going in person once COVID is over, I'd highly suggest doing that.
Right. I agree. And one other point here is that there's so many suppliers out there that think right off the bat that if we're selling on Amazon, all our micro brands that we're trying to develop is cheap. Mm-hmm. So what they'll do is they'll get you the cheapest quote. Something that has to be established out front is that, like, you're ready to build a quality product. And, you know, a lot of the times you'll get parts that they might skip out on. It might be a little bit less of a spring. So if you're doing something like a hand pruners, for example, the spring might be a different type of spring, so they can save a couple of cents. Well, if you go in there and tell them, you know, the specs, like you were talking about at the very beginning, if you guide them in that funnel and you let them know the type of client that you are and the type of customers that you want to work with, they'll put together a quote based on that rather than, oh, okay, here's another plastic shoe stretcher that you can get at the cheapest price and go and compete with everybody else with the same plastic shoe stretcher. They'll innovate for you.
I agree. I 100% agree. And not only that, it's really the old cliche that comes up time and time again that I'm sure you've heard is, I want the best quality at the best price. What does that mean? I mean, you have this mug here. You can make this mug 1,000 different ways, whether it's, you know, not attaching the handle well, whether it's using a cheaper material. And they will usually try to give you that cheapest price because that's what everyone's shooting for, the best quality at the best price. Now, what they take that as is, I want your cheapest product. And what that's always going to result in 10 times out of 10 is negative reviews, is yep. customer returns, is, you know, suspensions on your account. It's you're paying more in the long run if you go with the cheapest product every single time.
Right. And it just depends where you want to be. If you're building a brand or a micro brand, you've got to have some sort of quality. If you decide that, all right, I'm going to be known as the bottom feeder, you know, I call them product cannibals, you know, because they nobody makes money. You got to sell huge volume. But if you have a better product at a higher price, more profit for you, better profit for the supplier, it really is, I hate using this expression, win, 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 you know, but everybody goes home making a dollar and, you know, your brand builds. So I'd like to hear a couple of more interesting tips about Chinese culture.
I think another one that we typically see, I guess, our users bringing in is that they were told yes by a supplier, but there was something that went wrong. And I'm sure you've heard this before too, where a supplier will say yes, yes, yes to all the specifications, but they don't really understand all of them. And if they can't regurgitate everything that you said and they can't put that into, let's say, a design file, or they don't want to add it into the contract, or you don't see it in the contract in the first place, it's because they don't actually understand what you're trying to achieve. And so to get around just that particular scenario with the yes, it's like you said many times, building that relationship with them, doing those Zoom calls, sending them videos, building your own prototype if you have to, ordering your competitor's product and shooting a video about what's breaking. And so this is the quality measure I really want to avoid. How can we do that? And if they don't say, yes, we can do that, it's going to be an additional 5 cents. And we're going to have to include these parts of pieces and the production lead time might change, then they're not fully understanding what you're asking for. So always prying into what that yes means. Same thing with pricing. If you're shooting for the lowest price, and you know, I see this all the time, Amazon sellers shooting for, let's say, 10% less or 5% less even. If you're pinching pennies and they say yes, they're going to think that I'm doing right by this buyer by reducing the price. What I don't need to tell them, because I'm hitting their target price, is that I'm using cheaper material or I'm cutting out quality assurance processes. I'm sure you have some stories for that too.
Oh, yeah. Just on that note, though, and I think it's important. I know we've had podcasts about sourcing in the past, but one of the things that is so important, again, this is what I would consider Chinese culture. I don't know why, but you have to 100% sign off on a production sample. So we talk about inspection, and you got to do inspection as well. But product sample, sign off. And then what happens is you'll see over a period of time with many manufacturers that the quality of your product will slowly deteriorate. And it happens a lot. People will see it. And then finally, you'll start to get these one stars or two stars complaining about this, that, or the other. When you're putting in, and you have to add this to your pro forma, is that it has to match the original product sample that you signed off on. And if you don't do that, I pretty much guarantee that at least 50, but more like probably 70% of the time, you, over a period, a longer term period, it just happens. So I don't know why, but it happens.
Well, and they do something very particular in cabinetry specifically. And that's where they will take a cabinet sample, they'll cut out a square of it, and they'll paint it exactly how that final product has to be painted. And they'll store it in an airtight container. And every, I think, six months to a year, they'll reinspect that compared to what they're getting. And what you'll find is it could be that they're changing raw material suppliers. So it's a slightly more yellow or off-white color than what it started on. Mm-hmm. And same things with any other product, right? I mean, the supply chain changes so rapidly that they could be changing raw material suppliers. They could have changed engineers, and the engineer just looks at it differently. And they say, we don't need to do all these extra steps. We can just cut that out, save some money, have a higher margin, and build this product, which is the same product in their eyes. But that's when you'll see the one-star reviews and those rates of returns just increasing steadily. And so right. A golden sample is always have to sign off on.
Another thing that I wanted just to bring out, and maybe you can expand on it too, the difference between an email, scope of work, or PO, and then the final pro forma. So people that are dealing strictly by emails with their supplier, it's the worst, and it's non-binding to begin with. It's the worst form of communication. But then people think that a PO is locked in. Well, first of all, like, POs aren't binding in China, but the PO should have, or your request for quote, should be both in English and in Chinese. And one of the reasons for this is because the Chinese courts, and this is what I was told by a guy that I know that's been in sourcing forever. I've never substantiated it, but it makes sense that it's not so much that it has to be in Chinese, but it has to be the interpretation if it goes to court. And if it's just in English, the translators that they bring in could misread the information or mistranslate, which falls into the favor of the Chinese supplier, and it just doesn't turn out well for you. And then the pro forma, this is the step that a lot of people miss. And so it's different here in North America. If you send out a PO, it's solid. You don't have to take the information and put it onto your pro forma. Pro forma will have a stamp from your supplier showing that it's legit, basically. And everything that's on your pro forma plus any other detail has to be there. Or especially if you're doing molds, you could have molds over here on your PO and, oh, custom molds. Okay, who owns them? So you have to put it on your invoice that you own the molds. And anyways, anything else to add to that, Francois?
I think just adding that sample in there too, and agreeing on that sample. So one step that we take, for example, is just we'll order 3 golden samples and they all have to be exactly the same. We'll receive them at our China offices, inspect them, take detailed notes, and we'll get one back to the factory. We'll keep one ourselves for the QC inspector and one to the end user. And agreeing with a video, and you can do all this digitally too, but more traditionally it's done on paper. So that's why you have to get those specs in. And drill down the details, like who owns it, where is it going to be stored, you know, who covers the cost if it cracks. Right. Those minor details, if you don't get in there, you're typically going to be SOL and it's going to come out of your pocket. There's no way of really getting around that. So that is one thing that I completely agree with. It's all about the interpretation. And that's why we actually translate everything into Chinese before working with the suppliers, right, that we do. And otherwise, it's just not going to work out too effectively.
And that is one of the main benefits working with a sourcing agent, because they will do that. If you're on Alibaba, good luck. I mean, if you know Mandarin, okay, whatever, go for it. But that's something that can be done. Francois knows his business. His team knows his business. Our group knows our business, and we protect our clients. Mm-hmm. And anyways, on that note, Francois, I don't know if you have this, but a checklist of what you should put onto your pro forma. I mean, one of the things too, we put on ours, who's responsible if we get returns? Are you going to issue a credit? What's an acceptable amount of defects, you know, once we receive them? So these are little things that you can do. And then on your next order, you get a credit for how many units came back to Amazon, which it might not be a lot. Let's say it's 1-4%. That's the tolerance at Amazon. That's 1-4% back in your pocket. So.
Right, right. And not only that, but it's including what standards you have, right? So what are some of the key quality indicators that you're going to be looking for in this? What defines quality? So we do have a few forms out there that sort of touch on those, but working with a reliable QC inspector is hands down one of the easiest ways to make sure that they're abiding by that pro forma and that they're abiding by all the requests, you know, for quote that you initially sent, and that they're abiding by that golden sample. So QC inspection, I would say that's something else that you have to drill down in there. And, you know, let's say you're ordering 1,000 units. What standard are you using for that QC inspection? Right. What is a critical? What is a major? What is a minor defect? And they have to agree to that. They have to say, hey, yes, you're right. Your logo should not be scratched up. That should be a critical defect because that's your branding. But then if you say, hey, you know, this positioning is slightly off and I can live with that, that's perfectly fine. That's a minor defect. And if they agree to that, perfect way to build a relationship with them too.
Right. Oh, and by the way, everybody, that's too many cigars. But I have to apologize. If you heard incredible cow-like slurping in the background, I thought I was on mute and I opened up a pop can and I was just slugging it back while you were talking. So I apologize.
Yeah. No one heard you. You're perfect.
Good, good. Now I'm embarrassed. All right. So about Chinese culture, I don't know if there's anything else, but if we want to move on to something, and I'm sure there's lots more, but something that's going to be a game changer this year is having Prime Day, Black Friday, all together at one time. Any thoughts what we can do to help prevent any backups?
Man, and with these new release dates, I think it was, what, beginning of October, they're expecting to... Yeah, I think it was beginning of October. or end of October, I'm sorry, end of October, moving their Black Friday and starting it then. That's one of the rumors that are out there. Now, if you look at historically when you have to get your products in, that it's usually, you know, if it goes at the end of November, you have to get in by November 5th. So abiding by that, beginning of October means your products have to be on the water next week at the very latest, right? And so that also means that factories are going to be slammed with all the sellers that are trying to get in their orders. And it's not only them, right? It's standard brick and mortar stores. It's other manufacturers that are ordering parts and pieces from them. So taking all of this into account and the holiday season, just moving to e-commerce and 3PL warehouses getting slammed and not knowing where you're going to store it, it's so chaotic, especially for a new seller, but particularly for manufacturers. And it's because they haven't had to really deal with e-commerce on this level, dealing with COVID, being out for almost 2 months of manufacturing, dealing with restrictions on logistics, because the shipping carriers are limiting how many vessels are actually leaving the water.
The cost.
Oh my God. So that's one more thing. Two weeks ago, we were looking at a quote from, I believe it was Shanghai to Long Beach, and it was somewhere close to about $4,000 for a 40-foot container. That time last year, we just went back to look at some historical data, about $1,700 to $1,800. That is more than twice the cost for one container. And not only that, the lead times were significantly longer because the ports are being backed up. And Amazon is taking about 3 weeks to bring in all the units and, you know, limiting those quantities. We're not going to get into that, but the cost of that and then express air shipping just being so ridiculously high because of COVID and because of those passenger flights being grounded. I mean, it's just so many knock-on effects. And Amazon, they're going to do what they want to do, but they're not helping at this time.
No. We've been seeing, we have clients that we're working with, and just over a 1 week, it's almost going up daily, but over a 1 week period, 2 week period, we had two price hikes and they were crazy. So the clients are saying, look, this is way over budget if we send in high speed vessel, let's say. So we're trying to get it in there a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
But you know, you got to do it. If you wait, if you procrastinate, it's just going to go up. You know, we're stuck right now. You're going to have less margin. But the person who's going to win the game this year is going to be the person who gets through Prime Day with inventory and then has enough inventory for Black Friday. And if you haven't prepared for that, or if you haven't got another order in there ready to go fairly soon, you can budget for October. And then, you know, you got to get that other shipment in for November, because I don't know what to expect. I don't know if everybody's going to be hitting Prime Day and buying a lot of the inventory that they would normally have bought on Black Friday, or it's going to be two massive sales. I got no idea what's going to happen. What do you think?
I think it's going to just skyrocket. I mean, less people are going to the stores because they're limiting people that can actually go into the stores. The distribution right now is very hard for brick and mortar also. Even domestic trucking costs are spiking. Mm-hmm. And they're being limited. So 3PL warehouses are at capacity. Our 3PL warehouses have been at capacity for a few weeks now. And so when you sort of compound all these issues and you see that, you know, Amazon is toying around with those dates, I think we're just going to see a huge spike in e-commerce sales. And not so much in brick and mortar. And I think that's really going to be where we see the rise in solely e-commerce. You know, it's, my girlfriend was even telling me she doesn't go clothes shopping anymore because every time she goes clothes shopping, she can't try it on at the store. She has to come home, try it on, return it if she doesn't want it. Why doesn't she just order and it gets here in a day or two?
Right.
And so I think with that shift, we will see, you know, major sales there, major volume spikes. And I think all the sellers really have to prepare for that.
Okay. And just if anybody has any questions, you know, we're going to be talking, we're going to be moving on to how to prepare for Chinese New Year's, which is going to be a whole other thing. Just throw your questions over in the comment box. We're going to be talking probably for another 15 minutes or so. So I'd love to get to your questions. All right. The craziness of Chinese New Year's. So first of all, I don't know about you, but I find that a lot of people are procrastinators. So you've got your the group of dream clients that come in and they understand that you should be doing it. Like we were talking about this 3 months ago, getting your order in. And there was a group that did, and they're going to benefit from it. Then you've got that group that a lot of people that do it just at the time, like, you know, you're squeezing in the orders and you're probably, you know, working with your suppliers to negotiate. Oh, look at this, a great supplier or a customer of ours. Can you do this? Can you pull some strings? And then you've got that other group that will be ordering now, like for, you know, to get in for Prime Day, which is just not going to happen. And this is just an overlay from Black Friday to Chinese New Year. It's always the same group. You know, Leopard never changes their spots. But what we're looking to experience this year for Chinese New Year's, that's going to be a different ball game than what we're used to. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, Chinese New Year obviously is the biggest travel time in the entire world, with, you know, over a billion people that are traveling. I think it's something like 3 billion trips were logged last year. So something along those lines. And we have also those users that, you know, they ordered a few months in advance and they don't just plan for, hey, I need to have this last until October, November. They're saying, I'm forecasting until May of 2021. And those are the ones that they're very successful because they're forecasting. Even if they don't know how the market's going to go, they might be storing in a 3PL warehouse, or they might store it even in China. And that way they can have inventory ready to flow, because the logistics isn't going anywhere. It is going to be a little impacted with, you know, the demand boost, but your manufacturers, that's who's really going to be impacted, because it's a bottleneck, right? One manufacturer can only pump out, let's say, 1,000 units. And if they have 10 customers, each one typically orders 100 units, perfectly fine. They have a flow. But now we have Q3 and Q4, where now they're seeing all the same customers order double or triple their inventory. And so they're working around the clock to try to fulfill them. And that's where you see the quality issues and over promises and under delivery. And that's where you can really fall back on what we talked about at the beginning of this. And that's building a relationship, right? And being upfront with them and being the expert that you should be in the product, in the sales, in the marketing, and in the quality. So one thing that I definitely think needs to be said is that size matters. Size 100% matters here. And it's, are you going to be just ordering something to last you through Prime Day? Are you going to be ordering something that lasts you through maybe Christmas? But then what are you going to do in January, February, March, April, and May? When January, they're essentially going to start closing their doors. February, they're closed, or they're, you know, ramping back up and hiring new personnel, which is another topic that we can definitely get into. But then even if you order in February, now we're talking about production into March, right? For January, March, yes, March, into March, into April, and now shipping into May. And so it's not just planning for these holidays that are coming up, but it's planning for Q1 and Q2 of next year. I think that's so vital. And those orders have to be placed now. If you wait any longer, I mean, at the very latest October, but if you don't do it now, you're going to run a risk of timing issues, of shipping cost increases, of quality issues, of maybe your factory not wanting to work with you because you're not on the same level as all their other customers and you don't have a good relationship. So there's all these compounding issues that come with Chinese New Year and the holiday season that if you're not really starting production in the next month or two, you're not going to be a successful seller. You're not going to have a successful business. It's going to impact your seller score. I mean, you're essentially going to have to start from scratch in 2021.
Oh, you're on mute.
No, I was just mouthing my words. So right now the suppliers are busier than ever. They're getting back into they've been in the factories and working for a while, but they're going to get hit hard. They're like preparing right now for everything that's happening. And then when you start to look at Chinese New Year, I think there's going to be they're probably going to double or triple their capacity. You know, with everything that's happening, with at least the trends that we're seeing with the e-com, like everybody's going out and buying, you know, Norm the Gnomes. They're buying, you know, just it's at a level that I've never seen before, and it's going to continue to rise, especially over the next few months. Inventory strategy is going to be key too. So I know we've talked about this on the podcast before, but one of the things that you can do, we had Afalabi Orkun on last week, I think, and he's my partner. And one of the things that he does is he negotiates with the supplier, and he'll say, well, usually they'll just ship out, let's say, 1,000 units. But now they're in pre-negotiation to do 2,000 units, 1,000 shipped, and let's see what we can do to have 1,000 ready so we can get them shipped out whenever it hits or triggers a certain inventory alert. So then once they ship, then it gets put back into production. So at least now our suppliers, a lot of them, are willing to negotiate better terms so we can put the product into their warehouse and then have it shipped over. And then we ship half to or whatever it could be. It could be 3/4 over to a 3PL and then whatever we can over to Amazon. But that's one thing that you can do like prior to Chinese New Year's. So it's on the floor. And if you are a procrastinator, then all you have to do is say, hey, take the shipment that's already in place, ship it over, and you don't have to worry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's, I would say that is probably the most ideal way to negotiate with current suppliers, actually. It shows them growth. It shows them that you want to continue doing business with them. And it shows that you do expect to keep selling this. It's not going to be a one-off order. You know, from 1,000 to 2,000, you're doubling your order size. So they can probably work with you because there's not as much, you know, lag time in the turnover of machinery, and they can pre-order their raw materials. Because one thing to really think about is that upstream supply chain, right? Most manufacturers aren't producing every single part and piece in-house. And so when they're having to order from their suppliers, if you make their lives that much easier, they are going to be more willing to lower prices, to store that inventory for you, or at least help you find a solution to store that inventory.
So I see, Kelsey, there's a question from Janelle.
Yes. Yes, we have a question from Janelle. Any additional advice regarding working with a new factory and an NNN in a contract that protects IP and sets us up for success? She also mentioned that we're working with a Chinese attorney in launching a product with an original design.
Beautiful. So you're getting the patent, either a patent design, which is a design for your patent, or a design for your design patent for your product. How's that?
There you go.
It shouldn't be that hard, but that's excellent. So if you want to handle that question from Janelle, oh, that would be great. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So if you have an established supplier, then they shouldn't have any problems with signing a Triple N agreement. Now Triple N agreements in part are very much just a formality, and you're not going to find every single established medium to large size factory that is going to be open to signing a Triple N, because remember, it's not just you. It's likely dozens of other potential prospects that are asking, hey, can you sign this agreement? Now, they have to take it back to their lawyers. They have to review them, make sure that they interpret everything correctly and that they're fair terms. Now, it should just be as easy as, hey, do you agree to not use non-circumvent and not disclose any of this information to anyone else. Unfortunately, it's not. And we do have to have agreements like TRIP1 agreements.
And now, and they can be incredibly complicated. I know we've turned away business because, you know, you end up with a book and, okay, for the lifetime of, you know, until my dying breath, there's this NNN. And oh, come on, be reasonable. No, I'm not going to give away my firstborn child. You know, oh, I under penalty of law, I'll be sued for $10 million. I mean, let's, you know, it doesn't have to be complicated. You can protect yourself. You should have a reasonable amount of time on there because who knows what happens in 3 years. But 3 years, you know, is a probably a 3 to 5 years is probably a good life frame or life term for that. I need more caffeine in my coffee or I've drank too much coffee today. But anyways, yeah, let's talk a bit more about what Janelle's question was about rather than me tripping over my words.
Yeah. And so sort of going back to them being a formality, I don't think every idea necessarily requires a TRIP1. I think they are nice to have. I know there's a lot of courses out there that say, hey, they have to sign this TRIP1. Otherwise, your idea is going to get stolen. The reality is when you're on Alibaba or in any other marketplace and you have 10 people signing a TRIP1 agreement, and particularly when they're trade agents, first of all, they're immediately going to break it when they speak to the factories about your idea. Now, secondly, it's going to be almost impossible for you to track back who exactly released your design. I mean, if you sent it to two people, especially, it's almost impossible to track. And third, if you're not reasonable with it, I mean, do you have the funds to really litigate in a foreign country and hire those Chinese lawyers? And is your TRIP1 going to hold up in Chinese law? Because as you said earlier, it is very much about interpretation and not so much about what's in that agreement and how you interpret it. So they're great to have if you have a supplier and you can visit them or you have a relationship with them and it's a standing relationship where you don't think a contract would hurt it too much. I would say go for a TRIP1. Otherwise, if you really believe in this idea, 100% patent it, go for a trademark, go, you know, protect your IP. But TRIP1s are not the solution to the problem. They are really a formality to build that relationship, I would say, with your supplier.
Yeah. And even when you get a patent, I highly recommend it. If you're jumping in with 2 feet, yeah, do that, but you have to police it. And you have to be prepared to go after the people that you have to find them. So it could be costly for you to do that as well, but I highly recommend it. It's just another layer of protection. So we are getting down to the last question or two. I just wanted to know if there were any other tips about red flags or other takeaways that you can give us before we sign off.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've seen this. The biggest red flag is work with someone that communicates with you just as much as you communicate with them. Anyone that you're initially talking to and they take 5 days to respond and they continuously do that, it's not going to end well. So I would say focus on communication, focus on their willingness and their excitement about the project, and focus on their honesty. I mean, if they're honest with you about not understanding something and needing you to explain it, chances are you're going to get a very poor product. And aside from that, back to what I said at the beginning is really treat this as a partnership, not as a transaction. You can only build a relationship with these factories if you do just that. So keeping that steady line of communication, being honest with them, telling about your growth strategy. I think these are all very important methods to first of all, avoid the red flag factories or suppliers, but also to find someone that's in this with you for a long time, not just one or two transactions.
Right. All right, Sai, good to see you again. What was the question, Kels?
I think it's more of just an opinion. Mm-hmm. Forward ordering now for Q1 and Q2 has to be taken seriously. we need to think about how localized lockdowns after CNY could have a massive impact on lead times.
Yes. And, you know, when Kevin King was on last week, we were talking about the whole IPI restriction issue. So one of the reasons I was reading this was one of the reasons why IPI restrictions have been in place is because Amazon is doing this to prevent or protect themselves against if Corona comes back in the fall. So they felt that they can get the inventory that's not moving out. They won't have to, by putting in these restrictions, put in the restrictions they put in originally when Corona came out, and they could have space that they can continue doing their work. So that's just an interesting fact, but everything is changing, and Cy, you're bang on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, who knows what COVID impact is going to have after Chinese New Year? 3 billion trips. It only takes a few people. So yeah,
exactly. All right, sir. Well, how do people get a hold of you?
Yeah, you could reach out to us on Facebook, follow us at Noviland Inc., I believe it is, or Instagram, shoot us a DM. You can email us, inquiries@noviland.com, or shoot me an email. I love answering emails, and I will go fully in depth, so be prepared for that. Shoot me an email at francois@noviland.com, and I'll always do my best to respond on time.
All right, fantastic. So, Francois, thank you for being on the podcast today. Really appreciate it and enjoyed talking with you. All right. I think that's it for today's podcast. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. We'll be posting the whole podcast and shorter clips on Norm Farrar, a.k.a. The Beard Guy. And if you just want to view the clips, and we've repurposed a whole bunch of little clips, you can check it out on YouTube channel. Okay, let me see. What else am I? Yes, this is the time where my son comes in and tells you to hit things, smash things, and like things.
Pretty good job. Yeah, you're taking my job away.
I'm
going to
take your job.
All right, yeah. Follow us on social media. If you haven't yet, subscribe to our podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify Podcast. And if you're watching this video and you haven't yet, hit that like button. We appreciate it. And I guess our sellerpool.com is having a big vote for best podcast. We are nominated. So go right here, sellerpool.com, and vote for us. And do you want to talk about Friday's episode a little bit?
Yeah. So again, for everybody who might be tuned in a little bit late, we're having a special podcast tomorrow about mental health. And also, we're going to be talking about National Suicide Prevention Day. So actually, I think it's today. I just saw it pop up. I don't know how we missed that. But so tomorrow, we're going to be talking about that. I'm bringing on Brian Hansel, and we're going to be talking about a very serious topic. I could not believe how many people have been affected by this, how many cases there were, and we want to really hit on mental health, what you can do, who you can reach out to. So please join us. It's not going to be our typical laid back, grab a cup of coffee. It's a very serious issue affecting a lot of people. So on that note, yeah, please join us. So also, yes, Kels.
I just want to say thank you for everyone watching today. I see that Marina, Christine, Irene, and Janelle, thank you for the questions. And Anthony, too. Glad you enjoyed it. And yeah, what were you going
to
say?
And we really do appreciate all of this. We're building a community. We're trying to provide content, not only video content, written content. Like if you go over to either normanferrar.com or the other sites, you're going to see that we're writing blogs. We're trying to broaden not only the Amazon, but the online sales, make people better business people, understand digital marketing, social media, trying to go very broad on this. So check it out. There's lots of information. Lots of our guests provide incredible information after the podcast as well. So I think that's about it, unless you interrupt me one more time.
I'm done.
Okay, you're done. All right, so everybody, please tune in. Our normal schedule is Monday, Tuesdays, and Wednesday, or Monday.
No, it's not.
Wednesdays and Monday. Fridays. How's that? Okay, and next week we are doing it on Thursday as well. Yes. Okay, so I think that's it. Thank you, everybody, for joining. And I promise next time I won't be as tongue twisted. See you later.
All right, thank you, everyone. Lunch with the 100.